This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Up top of the point, swings it far side, slap shot, Kucherov, and it hit Hellebuck. Did it get him right in the mask?
Yep.
It fell him, and he goes down, and he is hurting. Connor Hellebuck is stung on that slap shot, the one-timer by Nikita Kucherov for the far side.
And he's bleeding.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. We have 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to do it. We're all over the Winnipeg Jets, looking back at last night's Jets defeat to the juggernaut Tampa Bay Lightning, and we'll get you set for Friday night's contest against the surging Carolina Hurricanes. Without further ado, I say good evening to Ezzy, good evening to Sean. Gentlemen, nice to see you on this Wednesday evening, the 6th of March.
What's up, Drew?
How are you, Ezra?
I'm doing very well.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah, my cold is finally gone. That virus that I've been battling with is finally gone after 3 weeks.
I gotta say there, Mr. Ginsberg, for the first time that I've really ever noticed, and I'm not one to speak, I see a little bit of gray in that beard there for one of the first times ever.
Really? Where have you been?
I haven't noticed that.
Gray hair for at least 5 years now.
I try not to make eye contact with you. That's my first rule of thumb. But I got to say, over here, where I too have some gray.
A little salt and pepper.
A little salt and pepper. Yep. You are also getting some more salt in there.
Well, Drew,
than
you know
used
what
to.
It's like once you have kids, the gray hair is just multiply.
They just sprout out of nowhere. That's why Sean looks so young still. Sean's got that baby face still going on.
Good genes.
Can you grow a beard? Not sure.
Oh.
You never see
oh,
you
I
with
can
one.
Grow a beard, baby.
Okay, there
yeah,
you go.
I grew one 4 months ago.
4 months ago.
4 months, and it was...
No gray?
No gray.
No babies?
A lot of brown.
A lot of brown, no gray, no babies. There you go. That explains it all. Let's get started with last night's Jets defeat to the Tampa Bay Lightning. A 5-2 margin of victory for, as I mentioned, the juggernaut Tampa Bay Lightning. It's a score, I believe, that doesn't totally reflect the entirety of the game, because really up until, you know, the Connor Hellebuck injury and then the Steven Stamkos, I mean, that shot is unfair, but the Steven Stamkos bullet late in the second period, that was a pretty good hockey game. Chances on both sides. I would say Tampa was the better of the two teams, but the Jets, you know, when Adam Ernie scored to make it 2-1 for Tampa Bay, the Jets had a lot of pressure in the Tampa Bay zone, and the transition game of the Lightning is so quick that they were able to get the goal and then the insurance marker to make it 3-1, and then you sort of got the feeling that it was they were home and free at that point in time.
Yeah, before Andrew Kopp took that hooking penalty, and as you mentioned, you know, Connor Hellebuck takes that shot to the mask, boys.
Have you ever seen
Nikita
anything
Kucherov,
like that?
For anybody who was talking about, you know, how Hellebuck should have stayed in the game, or, you know, maybe, you know, he was over-exaggerating.
What?
Nikita Kucherov.
There were people saying that?
Well, Nikita Kucherov got everything on that shot. I mean, that was a one-timer slap shot. That might have been 95 miles per hour. So
it made him bleed just by hitting his helmet.
It was incredible. And he comes back into the game, as you mentioned. I mean, Lauren Brossoit comes in, and this is why I've always said this. This is why I think a goaltender should be warmed up similar to baseball.
Sure.
You know, a relief pitcher comes in, he's allowed to throw, you know, whatever it is, 15, 20, however many pitches. A
like
goaltender
eight.
Comes in there. Lauren Brossoit, you know, goes to the Winnipeg net, you know, okay, faceoff's coming up. You know, he looks over.
Tampa Bay power play.
Steven Stamkos
exactly.
on the power play.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay wins the faceoff. 10 seconds later, Steven Stamkos off the bar and in. Like, come on.
As soon as the Jets lost the faceoff, you're kind of like, this is not going to be good for the Winnipeg Jets. And then just like autopilot cycle. Man, they move the puck quick on that power play. And then I don't think I've seen in recently a puck come off a stick as explosive as it did on that shot.
Well, you did. You saw it 30 seconds earlier when it went off the stick of Nikita Kucherov. I mean, between the Kucherov shot, which bloodies Hellebuck, and then the Stamkos shot, which, I mean, no goaltender in the NHL has a chance on
which
that
bloodies
shot.
The pride of Brossoit.
Yeah, bloodied, I think it bloodied the crossbar when it went the bar down or whatever. The Tampa Bay Lightning are just strictly they're a juggernaut. And for the first, you know, 30 or so minutes of that game, the Jets were skating with them, and the Jets were in the game. And then Tampa Bay just, you know, you cannot say, is it a bad pitch by a bad pinch by Tyler Myers? It's probably not a great pinch, but I understand what his thinking is. And he just can't get back in time. And it's a beautiful 2-on-1 goal by the Lightning. You know, Matthew Joseph over to Adam Ernie, and it's 2-1. And then, you know, then the Stamkos power play goal, and the Jets are reeling at that point in time.
Right. And, you know, earlier you mentioned juggernaut, and the word juggernaut has been thrown out a lot with the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, fantastic, great, excellent. I mean, this team has 51 wins, and I was, you know, thinking about the 1995-96 Detroit Red Wings. That was the last year the Jets 1.0 were in town.
Sure.
And I was thinking back and kind of comparing this Lightning team to that Red Wings team, and that team, of course, included Sergei Fedorov, Steve Yzerman, Nicklas Lidström, Brendan Shanahan. Goaltenders were Chris Osgood and Mike Vernon. You had Fedosov on that team. You had Konstantinov on that team. Slava Kozlov on that team. So you had a lot of really good players. That team, of course, won 62 games. And this Lightning team, guys, has a really good chance to win 60 games. You've got 16 games left here, right?
Yeah, they have 15 games.
Sorry, 15 games left.
They need 9 wins in the next 15 games.
And that's
games.
Very much doable. And at the very least, they're going to be in the high 50s. And you just don't see that anymore in today's NHL. I mean, you don't see those types of numbers that you saw back in the mid-90s or late-90s, right, Shawnee? So, I mean, this team, just the fact that you're comparing them to that mid-90s Red Wings team, because if you guys remember back then, I mean, we were very young. I mean, I was 14, Drew was 15, you know, Sean was still in diapers, but when you're talking that team, I mean, they were comparing that team to the early 70s, mid-70s Montreal Canadiens. Mm-hmm. Remember the team? I think they won 72 games.
75, 76 Canadiens.
There you go. So when you're talking about some of the best teams of all time, and you don't win anything in the regular season. You know, the Lightning are going to win the President's Trophy, but they don't really care about the President's Trophy. They want to get past the Eastern Conference Final, something that they weren't able to do last year with the Washington Capitals. But just watching Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos, Braden Point, Victor Hedman, all of the skill. I realize the Jets don't have Josh Morrissey, and they didn't have Buff, or they didn't have Adam Lowry last night, but they're not going to use that as an excuse. And I don't know if it mattered who was out there last night. The way the Lightning are playing right now, they're almost unbeatable.
You didn't even mention Andrei Vasilevskiy. And you know, one of the top goaltenders in the NHL. You look at that Lightning team, and you, I don't know, like, where's the weakness? Like, what are you pinpointing as a weakness on that team based on that performance last night? We saw them earlier in the year here in Winnipeg where they lost in overtime to the Jets. And, you know, anytime anybody can take a victory off the Lightning, that's quite the accomplishment. But you look at last night's game, you know, and I just don't know what you would pinpoint as an area that you could say, this is the game plan. You know, this is the area you have to target. This is how you beat that team. Because from top to bottom, 1 through 12, 1 through 6, and then with Andrei Vasilevskiy in net, that Tampa Bay Lightning team simply looks dominant.
Well, the only weakness you might have said earlier in the season, Shawnee, was the backup goaltender, but Louis Domingue's been amazing. Yeah, does he have, 20 wins?
When I was in Tampa Bay, I saw the game against the Columbus Blue Jackets where Bobrovsky refused to come out in the third and all that. But on the way to the game, this kid was talking with his dad, and it's really funny. And he was saying, do you think we get to see Andre today, Dad? And I guess Andre Vasilevskiy. And the dad looked at the kid and went, well, son, doesn't even matter. Louis's playing great, too. And it so exemplifies the Lightning season right now. They're tremendous.
Like Louis Domingue, Sean, is 19-5. Sorry,
but he's 19-5. That's crazy. Like they are so unbelievable. And yeah, lost amongst, you know, the on ice play was how amazing Andrei Vasilevskiy was. I mean, whether Kyle Connor didn't bury that or Andrei Vasilevskiy stopped that one time pass from Brian Little, that was a turning point in my opinion. The Jets would have gone up 2-1, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And I mean, Kyle Connor can convert, and then they go the other way, and it's 2-1 for the Lightning, and then it just kind of all snowballed from there. But, I mean, top power play in the league, top penalty kill in the league. They average the league high in goals. I mean, they are rolling. And my question to you, gentlemen, is it cup or bust this year for the Lightning?
Well, there's no question it's cup or bust. If they don't win the Stanley Cup, they've been the best team in the NHL this season. Now, the best team doesn't always translate into the Stanley Cup champion because, you know, we play 82 games of a regular season and then decide that that hasn't shown enough. We need to play an arbitrary number of games in a playoff round where a team can, you know, win 4 out of 7. But the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to go down as one of the best regular season hockey teams of recent memory, probably of the last 30 years or of the last 40 years, to Ezzie's point before when he was talking about the 95-96 Red Wings, and then he was talking about the Canadiens of the mid-70s. And obviously we're not comparing generations because that gets you into trouble. But over the last 10 years, the last 15 years, I'd say they're the most dominant regular season team that I can think of.
Right, and the reason why I think it's Cup or Bust, Shawnee, is because when you're talking about, you know, the restricted free agents and the unrestricted free agents, everybody knows that Braden Point is an RFA, right? Braden Point's going to go from making less than $1 million. He's probably going to go to, what, $7 million, $8 million, maybe even $9
million. He's got 37 goals already. It's
right.
Crazy.
So he's going to become one of the highest paid guys in the league, and they're going to be able to sign him even though the offer sheets have been rumored with Braden Point.
Ooh, really?
Because the salary cap is going up, they are going to have the space. But when you look at that back end, and I don't think this is talked about a lot, Anton Stroman, Braden Coburn, and Dan Girardi, all pending UFAs. Now, when you're talking about Braden Coburn, he's obviously a guy that he didn't play last night. He's a guy that's had injury troubles. Mm-hmm. He's, I believe, 34 years old. So, I mean, he's towards the end of his career. But when you're talking about Dan Girardi, Dan Girardi's playing with Victor Hedman. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Anton Stroman. That's a second-pair defenseman for you. Yeah. So there's a chance that Dan Girardi and or Anton Stralman's going to come back. I wouldn't expect Braden Coburn to come back, but if he does, he's certainly going to be making a lot less money than he is this year at, I think, $3.7 million. But when you're talking about those three veteran defensemen, you don't know which one of those guys are going to come back. Now, sure, they could go out and they could sign Erik Karlsson, who has been rumored to be a guy the Lightning have targeted because he's friends with Hedman. But the point is, you don't know how many players you're going to have back, and you also know that because of the salary cap and the fact that Braden Point is going to make more money next year, you might have to move out one or two players, right? Another guy who's an RFA, Cedric Paquette, who scored yesterday, he's only making $1 million. He's going to get a raise.
That guy gets under people's skin.
Right? And so he might be the best bargain in the NHL, right, Sean? So his next contract, he could make, you know, $2.5, $3 million a year. So the point is, they have to win it this year. As you mentioned, they're going to go down as one of the best regular season teams in probably the last 20 years, Drew. But this team has aspirations of winning the Stanley Cup. When you have this much star power, you have to.
And they're built to win the Stanley Cup for multiple years. I mean, you mentioned the three defensemen who are key members of the team who are unrestricted free agents at season's end. They have a guy like Cal Foot, who is a former first-round pick as a defenseman, coming up through their system right now, who they hope will be able to seamlessly transition into the roster. That Lightning team, I mean, you know, I don't know what you can say about the Jets' performance. It was, I mean, they were outclassed.
They've outclassed everyone. It's not a personal attack to say you've been outclassed by the Tampa Bay Lightning
and
this
that's
year,
not
right?
To, exactly. Right. And that's not to say that if the Jets and the Lightning were to meet in the Stanley Cup Finals, and it's possible, the Jets couldn't beat them because they could.
Hey, it's 1-1. Season series is 1-1 right now.
And in a seven-game series, stranger things have happened. But, I mean, the last night, the Tampa Bay Lightning showed everybody in Winnipeg why they are the class of the NHL.
Unless a team goalies them. Like, if the Montreal Canadiens goalie them, if Carey Price has two or three shutouts and he absolutely stands on his head, because I believe Tampa Bay would play Montreal if the playoffs started today, right?
If the playoffs started today, Tampa Bay would play Montreal. The Habs and the Penguins are tied up for the last wild card
spot. So regardless if it's Montreal, Pittsburgh, Columbus, I mean, Bobrovsky.
Carolina, possibly,
right. I just can't see a goalie stopping this team. And I don't think that the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to go all the way to the Stanley Cup final, win the cup without some type of adversity and some type of challenges, because I think there are some teams in the Eastern Conference, namely the Washington Capitals, that are in the way for the Lightning, right? So, I mean, they're not a perfect team, but they're probably the closest to perfect that there is these days.
They are an incredible team, the Tampa Bay Lightning are. The Jets obviously lost last night. They look to get back on their winning ways on Friday night when they play the Carolina Hurricanes. When we come back, we'll discuss that game, preview the contest between the Jets and another team that is certainly surging, the Carolina Hurricanes. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
Gets it to center, no further. Little to Morrissey. Morrissey back in on the left side. In for Little. Scores! Brian Little started the play at center ice when he broke up a Carolina Hurricane rush. Got it to Morrissey, back to Little, and Little's first of the year. has the Jets in front 2-1.
Dennis Bayock with the call, that from back in October. The Winnipeg Jets ended up defeating the Carolina Hurricanes 3-1. Brian Little scoring the game-winning goal late in the third period before Kyle Connor added an insurance tally with 1 second to go. Welcome back to NHL This Week. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit Linden Market Dental Center. .com. If you recall that game back in October, the Carolina Hurricanes really dominated a lot of the play. And the Jets, a lot of people said, were fortunate to squeak out that victory. And that was sort of the story of the Carolina Hurricanes season for the first part. Dominant Corsi numbers, lots of shots, lots of possession, no success. Well, lo and behold, since the calendar flipped to 2019, the Carolina Hurricanes have had nothing but success. 26-2 for 42 points. That is tied second overall in the NHL over their last 28 games. So the Jets go from Tampa Bay, which has certainly been the best team all season long, to the Carolina Hurricanes, who've certainly been one of the top teams in 2019.
It's ridiculous, guys. The Carolina Hurricanes have won 21 of their last 29 games. Think about that for a second.
Uh-huh. That's a good number.
We're talking about the Hurricanes.
I know.
Right? We're talking about one of the worst teams last year. It almost reminds you of the Colorado Avalanche going from 48 points to making the playoffs, right? And the Hurricanes, when you talk about the Hurricanes, Sebastian Aho is a guy that you immediately comes to mind, right? He's having the career year. Mm-hmm. We know that he's going to get the big contract. He's in that same class with Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor, Mikko Rantanen, and guys that are going to get
all the big RFAs.
Right. Mitch Marner, throw him in there as well.
Braden Point
we talked about earlier, right? But the biggest difference to me, guys, between this year and last year is goaltending. Right. And when you're talking about Scott Darling's actually not playing hockey right now. He's on a leave of absence.
Yeah.
He was your quote unquote number one goaltender at the beginning of the year. Peter Mrazek was brought in, and it's actually been Curtis McElhinney who's actually played the best out of any of their goaltenders. And McElhinney's 35 years old. So it really reminds you almost of Tim Thomas and what he did with the Boston Bruins in his early to mid-30s, right? McElhinney was a guy that has been a career backup with the Calgary Flames, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he has been fantastic. So they've been getting better goaltending, and the trades that they've made have really panned out. Nino Niederreiter has been a point-per-game player. I think he's got 18 points in 19 games or 19 points in 20 games, something like that.
19 and 20.
There you go. And you know, obviously Sebastian Aho was your best player, but
75 points in 66 games played for Sebastian Aho.
Look at the Hurricanes. You mentioned the Corsi. They average the most shots for per game, and they average the least shots against per game.
34.8 shots on goal per game played. And then you mentioned the fewest, 28.2 shots on goal against per game played.
Right. And this Hurricanes team is not just a one-line team either. I mentioned earlier the Sebastian Aho, Teuvu Teravainen, and Justin Williams line. You know, we got to talk about Michael Ferland. I really realized that he, injured Marcus Johansson yesterday, but he's having a nice year. And he was the subject of trade rumors, if you remember, about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And they obviously started playing better, and they realized they had a really good shot to make the playoffs. And they decided that they wanted to hang on to Ferland. He's been really good on that second line. This defense, I think, has always been underrated. Brett Pesce leads the Hurricanes with a plus 28 rating. Really solid defenseman. Obviously, the big acquisition was Dougie Hamilton. He's actually struggled. It's been Jacob Slavin and Brett Pesce that have been their two best defensemen this year. And when you talk about Justin Falk, who had the career year offensively, I think that was 2 years ago or 3 years ago, he's another guy that they were looking at moving. So they're very strong on defense. They're not necessarily the most talented offensively, but they actually have two really good scoring lines. Sure, once you get down to the third and fourth lines, they're not as talented as a team like the Jets, but this is a team that is tough to play against, and they aren't just a one-trick pony. It's a team that has caused a lot of teams around the NHL a lot of problems, evidenced by the fact they've won 21 of 29.
Well, you mentioned Michael Ferland, and he certainly laid out Marcus Johansson of the Boston Bruins yesterday, and Johansson's still in hospital with, I believe, a bruised lung, and he's expected to be evaluated in a week or so. Ferland left the game as well last night against Boston. We're not sure about his status for Friday night. We'll talk to John Forslund, the Carolina Hurricanes broadcaster, at the bottom of the hour. You are listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290, talking about the Jets and from the Hurricanes, a game you can hear Friday night on this fine radio station. But that Carolina Hurricanes team, as you mentioned, the trades that worked out, and almost as important as the trades that worked out are the fact that they didn't make a trade. I mean, they were bandied about they were going to trade for William Nylander. They were going to trade one of their defensemen for this guy. They were going to trade one of their defensemen for that guy. They were going to make moves left, right, and center. They ended up basically standing pat. I mean, the Niederreiter for Victor Rask trade is the big one, and that certainly has worked out to their benefit. But it's almost the trades you don't make that turn out to be the most beneficial ones. And right now, the Carolina Hurricanes are one of the best stories in the NHL. One of the best teams in the NHL, at least in 2019, you know, sample size isn't as full as the whole season, but 30 games tells you that they're a pretty good hockey team.
Yeah, and they picked up a point against the Boston Bruins yesterday. They lost in overtime, but what's going to work against the Hurricanes is their schedule coming up. Mm-hmm. After the Jets, they've got the Predators the next day. So Jets and Predators back-to-back. Then you've got the Avalanche on the road. Then you've got a three-day break, and then you have back-to-back games against Columbus and Buffalo. Then after that, you've got Pittsburgh, Tampa, Minnesota, Montreal, Washington twice. Then you've got Philadelphia, which is an easier game. And then you've got Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh twice, the Capitals twice. You've got Tampa Bay in there, Montreal, Minnesota. These are all playoff teams, mm-hmm. with the exception of Philly.
Yeah.
So it's a very tough schedule here.
Sounds like the Jets
to end
schedule.
The season. Yep.
You know, the Jets with an equally difficult schedule. It's going to be, I mean, the Carolina Hurricanes team is doing everything they can to make a name for themselves in a non-traditional hockey market. We know about the storm surge and the noted jerks and their celebrations and everything else. You know, the Jets have to bring their A game, you know, probably even you know, what they were planning on bringing to the table last night against the Tampa Bay Lightning. They need to bring that on Friday against the Hurricanes. They do get Adam Lowry back in the lineup, which will certainly be a boon to the Winnipeg Jets, because you take a player like Lowry out of your lineup and it's going to impact your team's results.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw the impact that the Jets resulted in, the Jets not having Adam Lowry. I mean, that's where a lot of damage was done yesterday, is those third and fourth lines against Tampa Bay. And maybe, you know, Adam Lowry and a line designated to shutting down some of the depth of Tampa would have been a little bit better, but definitely a boost to the arm of the Winnipeg Jets, specifically defensively. I mean, whether or not they're going to be able to, I mean, listen, we've talked about this for what seems like months now, the amount of shots the Jets allow on goal. You combine that with a team that fires pretty much everything on net with such a high Corsi percentage. I mean, mm-hmm. it's going to be a busy netminder for the Winnipeg Jets. So can Adam Lowry maybe help bring down the number of shots fired towards Connor Hellebuck or Lauren Brossoit, whoever gets to start tomorrow? I don't know, but it definitely helps.
Now, we're assuming it's going to be Connor Hellebuck all the way through the rest of this road trip. I mean, unless he wakes up tomorrow with some sort of symptoms related to the shot he took off the helmet from Nikita Kucherov. There's no reason to think that they're going to go with Brossoit at any point.
There's absolutely a reason why you would think Brossoit gets one of the next two, and it's because what we've talked about all year long. How many starts do you want your goaltender to have at the end of the year?
Fair enough, but these aren't back-to-back situations. They're not heavy travel.
No, but it doesn't have to do with back-to-back, Drew. It has to do with the fact that we talked about, if you look at the last four Cup winners, mm-hmm. we didn't go back any further than that. But most goaltenders did not play 60 to 65 games during the regular season, right? So if you're not going to play your goaltender one out of every four, are you going to play him one out of every five?
Well, so where would you play Brossoit then? Would you play him?
I mean, that's, and I'm not giving you a cop-out answer, but that's Paul Maurice's decision. I mean, I think you would ideally probably like to see him out of one of these two games.
Which one's easier, I guess? Which one is the weaker opponent? Just pick your poison. Are you taking the team that's, you know, second in the Metropolitan Division, or are you taking the team that's third in the Metropolitan Division?
I would probably start him against Carolina.
That's, yeah.
But it simply because you have to want to get him into more games than he was getting in the first half of the season.
And he played
the
well,
first 55, 60 games of the season.
And he played very well against the Nashville Predators, or he played well against the Nashville Predators in that unexpected spot start. So maybe that would be the only reason I would say why you don't expect to see him, is that you would have thought Hellebuck would have started that game on Friday against the Predators. He didn't, obviously, because he had the flu. So maybe that was the start that, you know, that Brassois was supposed to get one of these games either Friday or Sunday in Carolina or Washington. Instead, he got the game at home last Friday against the Predators. Maybe that sort of makes up for it, but I understand your point completely.
Right, and if he doesn't start one of these next two games and he starts against San Jose, for example, that would be a week and a half between starts,
mm-hmm.
right? So, I mean, Paul Maurice has his own schedule. He has his own flow chart. He knows what he's doing, but I would just like to see Lauren Brassois a little bit more. So if you're talking about, you know, there's what, 15 games left, 16 games left, you'd probably like to see him at least five or six times.
And how about Lauren Brassois taking the loss yesterday?
Well,
yesterday.
I tweeted that once it was 3-1 for the Lightning.
Poor guy.
And he gives up that third goal. It's, you know,
and then Jacob Trouba scores that weird one.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
That's a rule that needs to change. Not that anybody really cares about wins and losses for goaltenders in the NHL, but that's one that's crying out for it to be altered to some degree, because it's unfair that Brassois, who gives up that one goal, gets the loss in that game, as opposed to Hellebuck, who gives up the four goals as it happens. When we come back, John Forslund, Carolina Hurricanes broadcaster, is going to join us. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live Wednesday evening on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Wednesday evening, welcome back to NHL This Week. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, John Forslund. John is the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster. The Jets obviously into Carolina Friday night to meet the surging Carolina Hurricanes. John, good evening. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, guys. My pleasure. How are you?
Doing very well, John. You know, we were talking about it last segment. You know, earlier in the year, back in October, November, the Carolina Hurricanes were playing quote-unquote the right way, but they really weren't getting the results. It was looking very much like it might be another lost season for the Hurricanes. We were talking about it since January 1st. This team is tied second overall in the NHL, absolutely been on fire. They're now third in the Metropolitan Division. You know, even back in October, November, did you see this coming for this Hurricanes team?
No, I don't think anybody did, if they're honest. And I think the one thing I did know was that I had total trust in Rod Brind'Amour, and I knew that he was going to be stubborn about his approach and how he wanted to prepare his team and how he felt his team was playing. So when they were going through those challenges, he would say the same thing day after day, and that is that we have to play the right way, like you said, and we're going to get our chances, and our chances are going to start to fall at some point. And it's a hard thing and a hard hymn to get to out of the hymnal when, you know, people are questioning, well, we don't have the bottom line here. Where's the results? Now, a couple things happen. Their penalty killing in the first half of the season, the first month or so, was really bad. They fixed it. It's really good now. Their overall team game defensively has come around, and I think they're far better in the defensive zone than they were in the beginning of the season. In the beginning of the season, they played with a lot of emotion. Their forechecking was great. They pinch down the walls with their defensemen. They create things. They're aggressive. And that's the same way they play now, but they've fixed a few things in the defensive zone, which have made them better. And their goaltending in the last 6 weeks has been exceptional. Both Curtis McElhinney and Peter Mrazek have been lights out. And so because of that, if there's any issues with their team game, those two guys have been able to cover it up, and they've had some really supreme goaltending performances here over the last few games, which have camouflaged a few things that are going on. But any way you look at it, it's, I believe it's 21 wins in the last 29 games. It's a sensational record since New Year's Eve. They are among the league leaders in goals scored since that time period, whereas in the first half of the season, they were dry. They weren't scoring goals. And so it's been a complete turnaround, been a total team effort. And talk about a few guys individually, but by and large, every game, every player has something to say about where they're at.
John, we're a Winnipeg-based hockey show, so we have to ask you about Swan River, Manitoba's Michael Ferland. Had a huge hit on Marcus Johansson yesterday and then dropped the gloves with David Backes, and he actually left the game, as did Johansson. I guess the first part of the question is, how is Michael Ferland doing? Is he going to be able to play in the Hurricanes' next game? And how big has Ferland been for the Hurricanes' success, not just the goals and the assists, but the way he plays?
Well, he's been great, and, you know, he was a subject of many trade rumors, and as you know, he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season. They're going to have to make a decision on where they go with this guy. He's been full value. He plays a hard game. He goes to the net. He has a nice set of hands for a big guy. He gets around the ice well, and his teammates really like him, and he's a throwback. I observing him from the outside, he appears to me like a guy that probably played, you know, back in the 80s when I broke in at the American League level as a broadcaster. So that's what I see in Michael Ferland. Now, will he play Friday night? It's a question mark. He was evaluated today by team doctors. There's some type of an upper body concern with him based on that hit and the fight he had with David Backes after the hit of Marcus Johansson. You know, he's had head trauma this year. He's had a back problem. This could be a shoulder. There could be a lot of things in play here with Michael. And I'd say right now it's 50-50 for Friday.
You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. John Forslund, Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster, is our guest. Friday night, the Jets and the Hurricanes on this fine station.
John, I got to admit, I'm a sucker for nostalgia, so I just have to ask you, what did you think of the green unis, the old homage to the Hartford Whalers? I know it was a loss. I know it was on the road, but what did you think of it, and how was it received back in Carolina?
Well, it's received really well in Carolina. And it's received really well around the league. And by and large in New England, it's received really well. But there are people in Hartford that still resent the fact that the team moved. And that's a tough part. And that's a tough part for a lot of us who were with the team. You know, I joined the team in 91. So went through the whole thing, went through the years leading up to the move and the move. And very emotional. And you guys can relate to it because you guys lost the team and then recaptured it and deserved to have a team back in Winnipeg. For Hartford, you know, the jury's out whether they really deserve the team, whether they could ever support a team again. Some people think they can. So I have a lot of mixed emotions about this. I understand why the Hurricanes and the management, the ownership decided to go for it. It's a marketing thing. The uniforms are hot. They're a really hot merchandise item at the NHL level. And that's all well and good. But Tom Dundon has, the owner of the team, has kind of embraced the legacy. Whereas when we first got to North Carolina, Peter Karmanis, the previous owner, really wanted to cut the cord and wanted to move on and forge out a new identity. And luckily for him and for everybody involved, you know, the Hurricanes hit it and you know, made the playoffs quickly, went to the Stanley Cup Final in 2002, hosted a draft in 2004, won the Cup in 2006, made the conference finals in 2009, and hosted an All-Star game in 2011. So there was enough there to say, well, everything is about the Carolina Hurricanes history from 97 on. But I like it myself. I really like it that they've been able to embrace this part of it. This is the genesis of the whole thing. But to be honest with you, I kind of had mixed feelings going into the game on the 23rd of December at home. I didn't know how to really deal with it because I'm still emotional about the move. I grew up in New England. And this one last night was okay. But it played out like every game that I saw with the Whalers going into the old Boston Garden and then the Fleet Center at the beginning of that building in 1995, whereas they play really hard, it's physical, and they lost the game in overtime. It's unfortunate, but that's what went down.
John Forslund is our guest on NHL This Week. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290, talking about the Carolina Hurricanes. And John, you know, in the previous segment, as I mentioned, we were previewing this game, and I made the comment that, you know, with all the trade rumors that were surrounding this Hurricanes team, Dougie Hamilton was going to be on the block. Jakub Slavin was going to be on the block. They were going to acquire William Nylander. They did make a trade, and that was obviously bringing in Nino Niederreiter. But almost as good as that trade has proven to be, it seems like the trades that Don Waddell didn't make were just as important to this team's recent success.
Well, I think he needed to send a message. They were surging, and they continue to surge, and they're playing. You know, they've got points in their last six games at a five-game winning streak until last night. But I think he needed to send a message to the group that, whereas, you know, guess what? You know, we believe in you guys. You guys go for it and see where you can take it. And because of that, I think the team responded. So the trading deadline, you know, it was the 25th. We all know that. But the next game on the following day was against the LA Kings for the Hurricanes at home. And they went out and just ran them right out of the building, beat them 6-1. So I think the players appreciated the fact that the management kind of sent a message that this is the group, go for it, see if you can make the playoffs. They responded with one of their best efforts of the season, and it was just really a lopsided game. So I think they were betwixt in between. The return on some of these guys probably wasn't as great as they thought. In Hamilton's case, he was one of a few right-handed defensemen that they have that were rumored to go maybe in a hockey trade, maybe to go to Toronto. That never came to fruition. And as far as Ferland is concerned, he was that one unrestricted free agent that a lot of teams were coveting. But they probably figured, you know what, let's roll the dice with him. He's been a big part of what's gone on here. Get to the end of the year, see where he's at. They've had really in earnest conversations with this player about extending him. And depending on what you listen to and who you believe, you know, the team says that they gave him a fair offer, and then you hear, not from Michael, but from other people around the league, that, you know, his demands through his agent were far greater than what the team was offering. So maybe they hit a middle ground. Maybe he walks on July 1. He's entitled to that. But they're going to go with this group, and this group will get him there, you know, and they're just going to have to see where it plays out by the end of the season.
John, one guy who's definitely not going to be walking on July 1st is Brett Pesce. He's under contract for 5 more years, and he leads the Hurricanes with a plus 28. And I was mentioning this last segment, it seems like nobody talks about Brett Pesce as being an elite defenseman, but he's on pace to set career highs in points. He's tied his career high in points. As I mentioned, he's got the best plus-minus on the Hurricanes, one of the best plus-minuses in the league. But is he criminally underrated, in your opinion?
Well, they have a few. You know, I still think Jacob Slavin's really underrated, too, because I think Jacob Slavin's in an elite category. And if you look at his numbers this year, you might say, well, they don't really play out that way when you look at Pesce's, if you're talking plus-minus. But Jacob does a lot of the heavy lifting. And you know, Brett's in a 3-4 role. And at times this year in a 5-6 role. Now, don't get me wrong. Brett Pesce is an outstanding National Hockey League defenseman. He's extremely consistent. He plays a simple game. He really gets around the ice better than people give him credit for. He can turn on a dime. He can get the puck out of trouble. He makes a lot of the best decisions you can imagine, you know, with the puck. And in the second half of the season, he's been joining the offensive mix a little bit more, as they all have, which has been a big part of why the Hurricanes have been scoring more. Their defense have become more active. Slavin is a bona fide 1-2, is a bona fide shutdown guy, is a guy that should get more credit. And maybe what has to happen here is the Hurricanes have to become more relevant, make the playoffs, and then people actually understand what's going on here. But at 24, he's one of the best young defensemen, trust me, in the National Hockey League. So they have two guys like that. And then you've got Justin Falk and Dougie Hamilton, who are just a little bit back of that, but very good top four defensemen. Trevor Van Riemsdyk is an excellent 6. And Calvin DeHaan, who they signed as a free agent, was a top four guy with the Islanders, is now a 5. And so 1-6, that's the strength of the Hurricanes. They have an excellent defensive core, which most people don't realize. So they come through, play the team, and then they understand when the game's over, wow, that defense is really something. They're mobile, they're athletic, they get the puck out of trouble. They play today's game. They have great defensive sticks. And, you know, they are 1-6, really about today's NHL defenseman. So that's a real strength for the Hurricanes. There's no question.
You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. This is NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. Our guest is John Forslund, Carolina Hurricanes broadcaster.
John, can you maybe explain to us how Evander Holyfield gets wrapped into a post-game storm surge? And not only that, What bet did Jordan Martinook win that he got to be the guy that gets one punch center ice, I quote that like jokingly, by the real deal, Evander Holyfield?
Well, you know, the guys come up with all these things. And so if Jordan Martinook decided, you know, that he wanted to be the guy, he probably just said, hey, I'll do it. I really don't know as far as that's concerned. In my role, I try to stay completely away from whatever they're going to do. And there have been recently, because some of these things now are becoming like Cirque du Soleil. These things are looking more and more staged as we go along. So the building knows, the game presentation people know, the spotlight people know, the mascot knows, the PR people know. And our television crew gets a little bit of a tip on what might happen. But I've asked them, please don't tell me, because when I narrate it, I want to be surprised too, like the fans. So that's honest, and that's how this has gone down. Now, as far as Evander Holyfield is concerned, he was promoting and part of a boxing event in the local area, and that's what he's into now. He's a promoter, and I believe, you know, this goes back to the Atlanta days, and Don Waddell, who's the current general manager of the Hurricanes. And remember, Evander did a lot of work with the Thrashers, mm-hmm. especially when they drafted Evander Kane,
yeah.
who's named after him, right? So there was a natural tie-in. But Evander came up to our booth, which was outstanding, you know, a couple hours before the game. We took some photos, got to talk to him and everything. And he told me he was an Atlanta Flames fan back in the day. Can you imagine? And I said, really? And he said, yeah. He said, I used to go to the games. And he started rattling off names like Kurt Bennett and Eric Vale and Tom Lysiak and Daniel Bouchard. I mean, it's legit. Like, he remembered all of these guys. And then he said when he was a young boy training in the gym, some of those guys would come and train in the gym, you know, for fighting back in those days, right, which was the norm for a lot of the enforcers in the National Hockey League in the 70s. So he actually enjoys the game, and he's a fan. And I don't think they had to twist his arm much to do that. So it wasn't something that they paid him to do. He was there because of the boxing event. He was going to crank up the siren, the warning siren that they do before the opening faceoff, which is a tradition. And I think it was just as simple as maybe Don or somebody reached out to him and said, hey, will you take part in this? And the other thing, too, and you guys and your fans can look it up on YouTube or Twitter or whatever you want to do, but Evander addressed the team before the game. And the team put it out publicly, and you can hear the whole speech. And Rod Brindamore told me that they had to put a video up before he came in the room because some of the guys had no clue who he was, right? So they had to show the kids, you know, who this actually is, four-time heavyweight champion of the world. But the European guys like Aho and Teravainen, would they actually know, you know, who this guy is? And then they brought him in. And I go ahead and look at it, you guys, and the fans and everybody else. It's great stuff. And he had a few things to say about the heart of a champion and all this, and they went out and played the game, and everything fell into place.
That's awesome, John. One last question for you here. Last night, Matt Cullen played his 1,500th career regular season game. Of course, Cullen played four seasons with the Hurricanes, including winning the Stanley Cup in 2006. What's your greatest memory of Matt Cullen as a Hurricane?
Matt Cullen is one of the classiest guys in the league that's filled with classy individuals, as you know. But Matt Cullen is one of the most caring teammates and individuals I've ever come across in my career. He genuinely cares about his teammates. He cares about people that work for the team. He's extremely respectful to every member of the media that comes into his locker room. And he deserves this. He deserves 1,500-plus games played. He deserves the career he's had. You know, he's been one of these players that has had to move from team to team only because everywhere he went, somebody wanted him. And it wasn't a situation of where he was cast off from teams, especially once he had Stanley Cup success with the Hurricanes. He went on to the Rangers and so on, came back to the Hurricanes for round two, then moved on again, and he's bounced, you know, back and forth with the Penguins and Minnesota and so on. But he is a tremendous individual. He's all hockey. He loves the game. His dad was a high school coach. His brother played. And, you know, from the grassroots of Minnesota to the National Hockey League, this is as genuine an individual as you're going to find. A beautiful wife, great kids, and you know, he's 42, and he told me when this next step was happening, when he finally went back to the Penguins and they had the Stanley Cup success, this part of his career is about showing his kids what dad's all about, which is kind of cool that he's given that opportunity. So many athletes have to cut it short, and their kids never get to see dad. They get to look at clips and look at videos maybe of what they were like in their heyday. But, you know, he's getting that opportunity now. But he keeps himself in tremendous condition, and the clock keeps moving forward for him. So good on him. I have nothing but great things to say about Matt Cullen. He's one of the greatest Hurricanes we've had. and it was really on a human front. You know, he was an outstanding player, outstanding in the Stanley Cup season of 06. He was a great second center, and was versatile. He could move around the lineup and kill penalties and so on. But A1 class across the board.
Yeah, some of us play hockey into our 40s to show our kids what we're all about, and the rest of us sit on the couch and demand the kids bring us some more bags of chips.
Matt Cullen wins a Stanley Cup at age 40.
Yeah, exactly. You and I get the kids to bring us beer when they're nice and young. It's pretty much the same thing.
You got to go all vegan like he is now, I believe, and totally clean with the diet, and that's something none of us can relate to, right?
I'm going for the all-bacon diet. It's almost the same thing. John Forslund is the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster. John, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime, boys. Take care.
Thank you, John. Thanks very much. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Subban, far side, Johansson back for Subban. Slap shot. He scores. PK Subban with a blast from the point. Wheeler emerges out of the corner. Wheeler stick handles. Wheeler cross ice for Laine. Shot. He scores! Patrick Laine with his third goal in the last four periods. Winnipeg's on the board with a power play tally.
Wednesday evening, welcome back to NHL This Week. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. PK Subban, Patrick Laine, both scoring goals as we return from break. What do they have in common? According to NHL players, they are two of the most overrated players in the NHL. PK Subban running away with that, if you consider that a thing to run away with in a positive sense. 23% of the players polled in the Athletic.com's NHL player poll chose PK Subban as the most overrated player in the NHL. Patrick Laine came in as second at 9%. What about that? PK Subban getting almost a quarter of the votes?
How is PK Subban overrated if he's won a Norris Trophy? Like, he won the Norris Trophy. I realized that was 5 years ago. Or 5 or 6 years ago, 2013, he won the Norris Trophy.
Yeah.
He's still, in my opinion, a top 20, maybe even top 10 defenseman in the league. I have no idea. And take these players' polls with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every time these come out and you put it in the show plan, I like talking about it, but
it's fodder for talk radio.
PK Subban, I think, is on this list as an overrated player because he's tough to play against. I mean, PK Subban's an excellent defenseman. We know he's a good offensive defenseman. But we know he's got that physicality, and he's a guy that is very tough to get around. I mean, he's a really good defender. That's one of the reasons why the Predators are a top team in the Western Conference. It's because they have defensemen like PK Subban, Roman Josi, Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis. So I don't really get it, because I don't think he's overrated at all. I think he's, like I said, at the very least, maybe you guys disagree, but for me, he has to be a top 20 defenseman.
A Western Conference rival of PK Subban said in a quote, he's got a good shot and that's about it. He does have a good shot. I don't know if that's about it.
He won the Norris Trophy.
Well, I mean, just because you win the Norris Trophy, you know, half a decade ago doesn't mean that you can't be overrated now. Now, I don't necessarily think that he's...
How many years ago was it that we were talking about how big of a ripoff that was for David Poile getting PK Subban for Shea Weber? Now we're talking about him being overrated 2 years later?
I don't know what to tell you. It's not me. It's the players in the NHL who are making this assessment.
He's a great player.
Laine at 9%, Aaron Ekblad at 6%. Dion Phaneuf, who's overrating Dion Phaneuf at this day and age?
Well, and for that matter, Patrick Laine overrated? He's one of the best goal scorers in the league. He scored 18 goals in 1 month. How is he overrated?
You'll have to ask your fellow NHL players about that. When we come back, Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune will join us to talk about the Minnesota Wild. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985 for freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right right to your door. Visit shopbernsteins.com. Going to be joined by Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune momentarily. The Wild, they've been playing some pretty good hockey as of late. They dropped their last two games in overtime and in a shootout to the Nashville Predators. But prior to that, they had been 5-0-1 in their last few games. So the Minnesota Wild, who are pretty much, you thought, were sort of playing out the string. They had made some trades. They looked like they were building for the future, are indeed still in the playoff race in the Western Conference. And really, the way I look at it right now, it's a wide-open Western Conference. You know, none of the teams, you know, are head and shoulders above the other teams. They all have flaws. And the Minnesota Wild right now are playing some pretty good hockey in the Central Division and the Western Conference playoff race.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Minneapolis Star Tribune, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Sarah McClellan. Sarah, good evening, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Sarah. How about yourself?
Pretty good.
That's good. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Minnesota Wild. And as I mentioned in the intro, the Wild have been playing some pretty good hockey as of late. They've dropped the last two to the Nashville Predators, but getting a point in each of those games. And prior to that, they went on a five-game winning streak. What's sort of been the secret of success for the Minnesota Wild as of late to get them right back into the heart of the Western Conference playoff race and really only 2 points behind the St. Louis Blues for third spot in the Central Division?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has started with their goaltending. And, you know, during that five-game win streak, they weren't giving up more than two goals a night. And I think that was a big catalyst for them to find that competitive rhythm, kind of get their mojo back. It's been kind of a tough stretch, a tough go before that where they just looked very inconsistent and it was up and down. And I think once kind of Devan Dubnyk stabilized and kind of, you know, gave that position the stability that it needs at this time of year, I think that kind of kickstarted the entire team. And then, you know, there was just kind of a new air of confidence. They were scoring at opportunistic times. They were scoring at clutch times. You know, they were finding ways to rally. They were finding ways to hold off teams. And it just looked like a completely different, confident team. And I think it starts, you know, at that last line of defense. I think that sets the tone. And I think that'll probably have to continue to be you know, the most vital catalyst for this team if it's going to stay in this race.
Sarah, I think you'd agree that Wild general manager Paul Fenton was trading for the future when he acquired Kevin Fiala and Ryan Donato. Most people thought, okay, these are trades for younger players. This is going to be moves that are going to benefit the team in the future. But both Fiala and Ryan Donato have been very successful. Donato, a point per game, and Kevin Fiala had two goals against his old team last night. I guess what's impressed you most against these two young forwards?
You know, I think just the eagerness that they have to want to come in and make an impact right away. You know, you're right. They're restricted free agents after this season. They certainly look like players that, you know, have the opportunity or will get the chance to be kind of more long-term cogs in this lineup. And maybe that's probably, you know, the most glaring upside of these types of trades is having, you know, that potential down the road. But they just seem like each has kind of embraced this kind of new opportunity, a new chapter. I think both have kind of fallen out of favor and had limited opportunities with their previous teams. And so it looked time for a fresh start. And I think both players have been eager for that. Donato, I think, like you mentioned, he's been pretty productive, involved in the offense so far. What stands out about him is he just puts pucks on net. And I think that's something the Wild's been missing, even from their veterans, is just there's some hesitancy to shoot. And good things happen when they do. And so I think that can kind of be contagious. And same with Fiala. He hasn't been hesitant or nervous to try to create and get pucks towards the net. And he finally got rewarded with two goals against Nashville on Tuesday. So they're starting, I think, to get more comfortable. And you're right. I think those are moves that were made with the future in mind. But, you know, the present implications certainly help the Wild. If these players can come in and make a difference right away, it only helps their bid for one of those playoff spots.
Sarah, recently I was reading an article in The Athletic, an NHL poll taken across from NHL players. And I was tremendously happy to see in the underrated category Wild defenseman Jared Spurgeon. It's about time that some love was given to this guy. He's every time the Jets play the Wild, I mean, he sticks out in such a positive way. I mean, this guy really is one of the most underrated players across the league.
agreed completely. And, you know, it's probably unfortunate that he doesn't get more of a spotlight, but I'm not sure if it matters to him at this point because he just seems to have found such a niche with the Wild. But you talk to any of his teammates or coach Bruce Boudreau, and they rave about him, and they feel like he is one of the best defensemen in the league. And you know what, maybe if he had the stature and the size of a Brett Burns or an Erik Karlsson, maybe he would be in that Norris conversation. But you look at how he impacts this team and the role he has to play on the top pairing next to Ryan Suter, to play the type of minutes, to play in every situation. He's on the point on the power play. He's a go-to penalty killer. He's out there in the last minute of games to do all that, contribute offensively, not be a liability defensively. He's always in the right spot. He just thinks the game at an elite level. He's been integral to the Wild, and I think a lot of their competitiveness over the years. And, you know, moving forward, too, I think it'd be scary for people who root for the Wild or care about the Wild's success to envision where this team would be and what its future would look like if Jared Spurgeon wasn't in the mix.
You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune talking about the Minnesota Wild. Sarah, last two games, shootout losses to the Nashville Predators. The first one featured a controversial goal by Ryan Johansson against Alex Stalock. The second one featured a controversial goal by Ryan Johansson against Devan Dubnyk. I guess your thoughts on the two goals, and especially your thoughts on Dubnyk's, you know, being very vocal about the goal that Johansson scored against him, that he thought Johansson had stopped his momentum and didn't keep moving forward, which was contravening the rules.
Yeah, he was super frustrated after that game. And I think a lot of that was probably indicative of just the race that the Wild is in and the fact that, you know, they need every point they can muster right now. So I think that was probably that heat of battle. You know, the team was up 3-2 in the third period, had battled back, given up the tying goal, fallen behind 4-3. I think the third and fourth goals were goals he was probably frustrated by too. I think the third one, he felt he was too deep in his net, and then the fourth one went under his armpit. So I think you kind of take all those factors in and it kind of maybe makes more sense, the context of where he was coming from. But, you know, you look at those plays and the referees didn't have any issue with them. Bruce Boudreau didn't have issue with Johansson's move Tuesday night. He felt that he didn't stop his forward progress. You know, I think it probably just looks maybe in the moment dicey, or as a goalie, I'm sure trying to defend that, it can be frustrating. But, you know, I think right now it just points to how every point gets magnified, every play. Obviously, then the importance gets, you know, magnified even more with how vital this race is, how tight it is, how many teams are clumped together. And I think that infiltrates players and their mindset. I think they feel that. I think that was probably, you know, very reflective in Devan Dubnyk's post-game comments after that one.
Sarah, Jason Zucker is a guy that many people thought was going to be traded prior to the trade deadline. And then early last week, he scores a goal against the Jets. And a couple of games later, he scores a goal against the Nashville Predators. Is Zucker a guy that is playing with a chip on his shoulder? And do you think that he's a player that is maybe showing Paul Fenton that he wants to stay with the Wild and be part of this team for at least the next 4 years of his contract?
Yeah, I wonder if that's a motivation at play. You know, Jason Zucker hasn't wanted to address that, you know, right after everything kind of the trade deadline passed. He said he had no comment. He was moving past, you know, a potential move that might have went down but didn't with Calgary. But I wouldn't be surprised because, I think there, you know, he signed, like you said, a five-year contract last summer, you know, with the intent then to be a long-term cog, and then only a few months into that deal to, you know, potentially be on the move. I'm sure it's jarring to a player, especially one with such deep ties in the community like Jason's implemented. He's very active on the charity scene, and I think he's really made this his home. So, you know, I can see why that would maybe open your eyes. And, you know, to be fair, though, he hadn't really been contributing as frequently as he had last year leading up to it. You know, it kind of in the other vein made sense why the Wild might want to see what's out there, because, you know, he hadn't performed at the level that he had before to land that deal. So it's a tough situation, but, you know, certainly since then, in his last four or five games, he's looked like a rejuvenated player. Maybe it was just the relief of getting past the deadline. I'm not sure, but his contributions are key. And for someone, you know, who scored more than 30 last season, you kind of expect that maybe to be a standard moving forward. The Wild, you know, certainly needs those contributions from him. And when he is involved, look what happens. They're on a 7-game point streak.
You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. This is NHL This Week. Our guest is Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
Sarah, I have to ask you, what was the reaction, you know, within the Minnesota dressing room and amongst, you know, the fan base in general when the news broke that the Wild had traded Matt Hendricks back to the Jets for a 7th-round pick at the NHL trade deadline?
Yeah, I think for the players in the room, you know, I think he kind of infiltrated himself so seamlessly. You know, I think it was probably tough to see a caliber of teammate like that go. You know, he didn't play a lot. I think, you know, everyone's kind of aware of where Matt Hendricks is in his career. He was kind of in and out of the lineup. He battled some injuries, but he just carried himself with the type of professionalism and leadership that teams really rely on, and there's still a premium on it. I think that made sense and why the Jets wanted to acquire that back. So, you know, in his short time here, I think he left quite an impression, especially being a local, being a Minnesota native. You know, Bruce Boudreau called him his favorite player. You know, it's just tough to find players like that, you know, who can make that type of impact, I think, and know they're not going to be in the lineup, but still find a way to contribute. And so I think his stint here was memorable for that regard, for him, probably his family too, but also just how he impacted, you know, young players too, and just, you know, emerging as a role model, what it takes to be in this league for as long as he's been.
Sarah, last question for you. Eric Staal was vocal that he didn't want to be traded before the trade deadline. He obviously wasn't. Signs a 2-year contract extension with the Wild. You know, why is he enjoy the Wild organization so much, I guess? And then do you get a sense of relief from him now that the entire sort of UFA ordeal is behind him?
Oh, for sure. I think there's been a huge weight lifted, probably off his shoulders. And it looks like that in his play. He's looked like a different player these last 7 or 8 games. He's, you know, he's contributing assists. He's contributing goals, and he's getting back to more the Eric Staal that we've, you know, known to see him. And so I think that's totally reflective of the fact that his future is settled. He knows where he's going to be. He didn't have to change teams before the deadline leading up to it. And I think, you know, Minnesota has taken on such a sentimental value for him. It was the team that gave him a chance to kind of get his career back on track after he left the Hurricanes, was traded to the New York Rangers, and just kind of fizzled out that season, 2015-16. It was a tough transition for him. And, you know, I think having an organization believe in him, feel like that, you know, we still see the Eric Staal that we've seen for the last 12, 11 years in there. And he's proven that. And he's, you know, he's given back on his end of the deal and been a consistent 20-25 last year, 42 goal scorer. And so I think, you know, that means something to him. I think that's, you know, a player doesn't forget that. The teams that believe in you and want to give you that opportunity. I think that's why with his family here, they've made a home here. And it means something to him more than maybe just hockey. It seems to mean something to his entire family that they've found this opportunity here and really settled in seamlessly.
Sarah McClellan covers the Minnesota Wild for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Sarah, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.
Take care, Sarah. You're listening to NHL This Week. When we come back, we're going to discuss the NHL General Managers meetings. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, it's incredible. We'll call it the David Leggio rule because he didn't make it to the NHL, but he's actually having an impact as they're now going to award a goal in the case of a goaltender knocking off the net on a clear breakaway.
Frank Saravelli describing one of the rules that has been up for debate at the NHL general managers meetings. They certainly, well, I don't know how busy they've been. They've been meeting, I guess, and coming up with some rule recommendations. But I think they have plenty of time. The GMs do. They find some time to enjoy the nice weather in, where are they, West Palm Beach? Somewhere
yeah,
like
the
that.
Insiders are working on their tans, Drew. Come
well,
on.
I don't blame them.
They're a little bit pasty white. This Canadian winter is taking a toll on their skin complexion.
It's not good for the tan.
It's not good for the tan. Well, I don't blame them at all. If somebody offered me a trip out there to cover the general manager's meeting, I'd sacrifice myself and head out there. Welcome back to NHL This Week. You're listening to TSN Radio 12. 1290 Wednesday evening. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Asor with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
No, Drew, just wanted to mention, I know we're going to get into the GM meetings here, but, you know, Sarah McClellan is a guest that we've had on since we were on Red River Radio. Always appreciate her coming on. Of course, yeah, she used to cover the Coyotes, right? It's kind of funny because the Coyotes and the Wild are competing for that last wild card spot. We obviously didn't get into that with Sarah, but just a quick note on the Wild. They actually have the second hardest schedule coming up. You look at Tampa Bay, Florida back to back. Then they've got San Jose, Dallas, the Rangers, the Islanders, Avalanche. They've got the Capitals, Hurricanes, Nashville, Vegas, Arizona. I mean, you're talking about a lot of playoff teams there.
Well, they'll have earned it certainly in that last five game stretch. I mean, some of the other ones a little bit soft, but they'll have earned it over those five games to end the regular season if it comes down to that, and it looks like a will in the Western Conference playoff race. Let's talk about some of the recommendations from the general managers' meetings. Recommendation number one, a player losing their helmet must leave the ice surface immediately. Yay, nay, it's in keeping with what they're doing in international hockey and in the AHL. Does this make sense to you?
Of course it does. It's logical. You just mentioned it. It's been around in international hockey for a long time, guys, and it exists in the American Hockey League a little bit different. If you put your helmet back on, you can stay on the ice. Right. That's the difference in the rule. In international hockey, your helmet comes off, you got to go right off or you get a penalty. So, I mean, this, when we're talking about safety, right, and the rise of concussions and the rise of these types of injuries, you're just preventing injuries. So, yeah, of course, yay.
It's preventative.
What about if they adopt that rule where you're allowed to put your helmet right back on? Or do you think that they're going to, do you think, do you have,
I have
a preference?
No problem with that either. And as far as warm-ups go, guys,
yeah,
I mean, obviously a lot of players in the NHL keep their helmets off in the warm-ups. If the majority of players and GMs are in favor of forcing players to wear helmets, I have no problem with that, but it's not something I think about a lot.
Well, you know, it's not something you think about because you, the only time you think about it is when a player gets pegged in the head.
Is when Cam Atkinson, actually, I guess he was wearing his helmet, so that doesn't matter.
But it happens so rarely, Shawnee.
It does happen rarely. Can you imagine the fire in those pucks?
Pardon me, if you're the owner of a multi-million-dollar asset,
put on a helmet.
Put on a helmet, especially when...
Even if you don't
50,
tighten it up, at least have it on, right?
50 pucks are flying around at the warm-up, hitting the net, hitting the crossbars, hitting the boards. I mean, like...
Put on the helmet.
A freak accident, you could lose an eye.
You put on the helmet, and I think what they'll end up doing is what they do always with these rules. They'll grandfather in the current players and then enforce it for everybody who's joining the league afterwards.
That is grandfathered, that rule.
No, I think...
The helmet, warm-up helmet, I believe, is grandfathered.
Is warm-up, so they're going to make it mandatory for everybody?
Exactly.
Okay, well, it's about time. I mean, it's crazy that they don't. Time clocks are going to be inserted into the end boards. Seems logical. I mean, so the players...
Yeah, why would anybody have a problem with that?
I don't think that they would.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I saw that. I was like, okay, yeah, I guess so players can see how much time is left in the period or in a power play, right?
Yeah.
So
when I saw time clock...
It's actually surprising they haven't brought that in earlier.
Right? I misread it briefly. I thought it said time cards, and I was like, what? Players have to like take their time cards and check in and out of the
clock.
I'm on the ice
for this many seconds.
Yeah,
it's really going to slow the game down.
Your last
smoke
break was 17 minutes.
You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290 talking about the NHL general managers meetings, which take place in Florida. Teams will be able to choose which face-off circle to conduct the face-off in following a penalty.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that. I mean, I think sometimes it can have an advantage. Most times, I don't think it's going to have much of an advantage. Obviously, certain guys that take face-offs are better on certain sides, right? And we know that teams and coaches like to use different centers depending on if it's on the left side or the right side. And, you know, this has been brought up when you're talking about Alex Ovechkin, Steven Stamkos, Patty Laine. Obviously, you know, it has a huge impact on how these players get their one-timers off. Mm-hmm. But again, I mean, we're talking about pretty minor changes here, right?
For the most part.
I don't think this is going to drastically change the NHL.
I don't think anybody's going to notice in a lot of these. It's just interesting that, you know, they go
I like this one. This one's interesting. This one intrigues me.
They go to such efforts to do everything possible to even increase, you know, one more scoring chance. If this creates one more scoring chance by choosing where a team can conduct the face-off, you know, I don't have a problem with it, but, you know, It's just, it's really not, you know, exactly. How often are you ever going to notice this, to your point? The NHL's Department of Player Safety has proposed minor language changes to the rule book to help protect players and pursue potential discipline in the case of a sucker punch. The idea is to allow for a match penalty and or supplemental discipline for any player who punches either an unsuspecting or unwilling opponent. This one, to me, and this will still need a little bit more discussion.
Like, isn't that already in the rule book?
Shouldn't it be?
Well, I guess what they're saying is, like, you know, the example that they were using is Tom Wilson and Ian Cole. Ian Cole, you know, I
so think you can't jump a guy, essentially.
Basically, Ian Cole laid a hit. I think it was on Evgeny Kuznetsov. Mm-hmm. Tom Wilson engaged him. Oh. I mean, Ian Cole saw Tom Wilson coming, and I guess he was obligated to sort of drop the gloves, but Ian Cole had no interest in really fighting with him, and Tom Wilson broke his orbital bone. Oh. So, I mean, this one's a little bit, it's certainly going to change the game in that it's not going to allow, I hit you with a clean hit. Is not going to immediately allow for that guy, for any player to come on the ice and pound me into oblivion.
Yeah, and again, why would you have any problem with this? Because it's already in the rule book that if you sucker punch someone, you can be kicked out of the game and you can be suspended. So this is really just changes to the language, I guess, to make it easier to kick a player out who does that, right?
Yeah, and suspend him. The supplemental discipline is the big one there. So it hasn't been an especially interesting NHL general manager's meetings, but the line is that's because the game is in such a good place that they're able to do sort of a minor meeting as opposed to a major meeting. When we come back, we're going to be joined by former NHL player Mike Commodore. He's always entertaining. He joins us next. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program a good friend of ours, Mike Commodore, joins us. Mike, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Mike. You know, obviously brought you on to look around the NHL, see everything that's happening in and around the league. I want to start in Calgary, a city you are very familiar with, the Calgary Flames, atop the Pacific Division. Do you trust their goaltending to not let them down come playoff time?
Yeah, I mean, God, I really like Mike Smith. So, yeah, I'm going to say yeah. But, I mean, it hasn't been the easiest year for numbers-wise. I mean, the records are good. Rittich was playing really well, but I think he's, it's a little iffy. I'm going to go yeah, but I wouldn't bet my life savings on it at right this second.
Yeah, Drew, really starting with the hard-hitting questions here.
Hey, we only got so many minutes with Mike. I understand, Mike's only got so much time for us. I want to get him on the record and hear what he has to say.
Mike, we have to go back to the weekend and Jarome Iginla's jersey retirement ceremony. You played a couple of seasons with Jarome Iginla when you guys were members of the Flames. What was it like to be part of that ceremony? And I know a lot of people have asked you, I imagine, what's your favorite memory of Jarome Iginla? So instead of asking you that, what's maybe something that most people don't know about Jarome Iginla? Because we all know that he's going to be a future Hall of Famer, and he's arguably one of the nicest guys to ever play the game.
Yeah. Where can I go with that? I mean, there's obviously the first ballot Hall of Famer. There isn't a question. The ceremony was awesome. Had a really good time. It was kind of unexpected. I mean, I did play with Jarome through parts of two seasons, but I was like in the minors, and I was also hurt for some of it, so unfortunately I didn't get to play with him nearly enough. But something that people wouldn't know about him, I mean, he takes care of himself. He really does. You can tell by looking at him. He was always in great shape, and he definitely puts the work in, I will say. Something people might not know about him is when he has maybe a couple too many cocktails, he can get a little bit rammy. I don't think he understands how strong he is. That would be something I think that people probably wouldn't know about him.
Mike, I got to commend
you. Weren't looking for a hockey thing.
I got to commend you.
I don't have any hockey things.
On another great trade deadline as the insider, I mean, some great trade breakings. What did you think of Mark Stone heading to Vegas and then quickly after signing the extension there?
Yeah, I guess I'll take this opportunity to apologize to the people of Winnipeg. It seems every year, the 3 years that I've done it now, I'm trading people to Winnipeg. Like, it's not like I'm planning on where I want to trade them. I mean, I guess I try and trade one person a year to Calgary, but other than that, I'm just kind of random, and then now it's actually become some sources. So I will apologize. I traded a couple people to Winnipeg this year, and it didn't pan out. I just figured, I'm like, you know what, it's where he's from. I did some digging, and I guess he spends the summers there. So I was like, well, they might be able to, I mean, he really likes it there, so they might be able to re-sign him, but it didn't work out. But I didn't know until a couple hours before the trade that the Golden Knights had $17 million in cap space. That would have been something I would have liked to have known a little bit earlier. So that kind of makes sense, because obviously they could trade for him and sign him. You're not going to give up a bunch of stuff if you're just getting them for 2 months. So, yeah, I mean, he's a great player. Everybody says great things about him. So, yeah, it's a good pickup for the Knights. I mean, they've sure picked up a lot of people, and they're having another good year, but we'll see how it works out.
Mike Commodore is our guest on NHL This Week. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Mike, the Jets lost to the Tampa Bay Lightning last night, as pretty much everybody in the entire NHL does.
Everybody does.
Yeah, you know, when you watch the Lightning, and we were talking about this off the top of the show, you know, if you're an opposing coach, you know, what are you pointing at as a potential area that you can try to exploit on that Lightning team?
You know what? I would say, and it's not really how hockey is played right now, so, and I'm not talking about, like, sending people out there to act like idiots. Mm-hmm. But I would say, like, they're only, and I shouldn't say idiots, but just try and run around. I would say their only weakness from the games that I've seen and the games where they look a little off, I would say, if the Lightning play a team that has a player like Tom Wilson on it, who's a pretty good player, who is a really good player, actually, but who is pretty tough and can deliver some big hits and plays a lot, if they play a team against that has somebody like that on the team, and that guy decides to, you know what, basically a guy like Tom Wilson playing the Lightning has basically like carte blanche to do whatever he wants. There's going to be really no repercussions, really, as long as he doesn't take any stupid penalties. I mean, he could put them back on their heels. And I think that might have happened a couple times, once before this year for sure, like earlier in the year once he came off his suspension. So that would be like the only weakness that I could see, is I could see them maybe getting pushed around. That's it. That would be the only thing I would say.
Mike, to go back to the Calgary Flames, I mean, obviously you were a huge part of that 2004 Stanley Cup run. The Flames go all the way to the Stanley Cup final, almost win the Stanley Cup against the Lightning. Do you see similarities between this team and that team back in 2004? Obviously, it's not the same team, and you don't want to put, you know, unrealistic expectations on this current group of Flames, but do you see something in this Flames team that makes you think that, you know, maybe they could go all the way?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think they generally, from what I understand anyways, I think they have a good group of guys in there, and I think they all pretty much get along, for at least from what I can tell when I'm kind of around them. And I'm not around them all the time, but I would say that would be the same as our team. But other than that, like as far as like on ice stuff goes, I would say the similarities probably end there. Like they are and I know the game's changed, but they're a deep team. With a solid decor, with quite a few like high-end players. I would say, just to put it simply, their roster is pretty stacked. They have a good team. Our team in 04 was basically, not to shortchange guys, but it was basically Jerome, Mika Kirpasov, a couple guys chipping in once in a while, and then we had a team that was tough. Like, you did not want it. It was the toughest team I was ever on. Like, Olawa played, and Chris Simon, and we had Regier and Warner, and I'm missing guys, but we had like a lineup out there that could be pretty intimidating. And I think that was how we won a lot of our games too, is we were just, and we were hard to play against. We played hard. So yeah, other than like the guys all getting along, I would say the on ice stuff, I would say it's two completely different hockey teams.
Mike, prior to having you on, we were just kind of talking about the general manager's meeting and some changes that could be or were discussed there. And one of the things we were talking about is forcing players to wear helmets in the warm-up. Now, how do you think that would be received to the guys who right now are allowed to go out bucketless?
Not well. I don't agree with that rule at all. I mean, if I would have had to wear a helmet my whole career in warm-ups, I mean, my career might not ever happen. That was like my favorite part of the game. That's where I got noticed. I totally disagree with that rule. The guys that are allowed to keep them off should be able, they should all be able to take them off. I mean, hockey's a sport where you have so much gear on and you always have a helmet on with a visor now and everything, where really, like, fans can't really see, you know, your average fan really isn't going to be able to pick somebody out. And I think keeping the helmets off, at least it makes it, I know it's just warm up, but whatever, it's better than nothing. I mean, bet you fans, you can actually see the person. And I think it's good for the game, myself personally.
Mike Commodore is our guest on NHL this week. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Mike, last week, a good portion of the hockey world was focused on the Leafs and John Tavares' return to Long Island. The crowd at Nassau Coliseum was certainly vocal. You know, your thoughts on what the Islanders fans, the reception that they gave to Tavares, was it over the line? Was it fair for them? And, you know, did you think that, or do you think that they maybe took it too far?
Okay, so basically they were chanting some swear words, right? Just to make sure I have it all.
There was some swear words.
Jerseys at him.
They threw some stuff at him.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think that stuff in this situation for one game, like don't do it all the time, but I think for one game, I think, to be honest, when I saw the highlights on TV, I laughed. I'm like, okay, sure, maybe some of the chants with kids in the stands. Okay, I kind of get that. But I think the rest of it, I think it's totally fine. I mean, he might not have liked it, and I can understand, you know, people get a little bit upset about it. But, look, I mean, the Islanders fans are passionate. I mean, Tavares had, from all reports, I'm not his agent, but they offered him a lot of money, and I think with an extra year, wasn't it? They were the only person, only team that could. So he took probably less money, I guess that would be fair to say.
Over the length of the contract, sure.
Over the length of the contract. So, yeah, I mean, basically he kind of thumbed his nose at the Islanders and I'm out of here. And if I'm an Islander fan and I want to yell at him, I think that's fine. Now, I understand John Tavares' point of view, too. I mean, I didn't know. I forget where I had him signing. I didn't have him go on the Leafs last year because I hate Babcock, but I didn't know that he used to sleep in Toronto Maple Leaf pajamas. I didn't know that until he posted the picture. But so I get it from John's side, too. But if I'm an Islanders fan, I don't know if I would have thrown things at him. That might be maybe a touch far. But I definitely would have been right in on the chance, no matter what they're chanting.
Mike, you were in town last week for the Mike Keane Classic, and obviously a great opportunity to raise some money for a great cause. But more importantly, how did it go on the ice, and did you have an opportunity to get in one after the game?
During the game, as the case may be.
Yeah, no, I didn't during the game. In between, we had to play three games. Actually, we kept it pretty clean at the arena during the day. No, it was great. You know what? I love coming in for the tournament. Mike had me last year for the first time. It's a good chance for to see me, see my buddy Andy Kohler, who I used to go to North Dakota with. So I like to take that opportunity, too. So, no, it's good. We flew in Wednesday, got in one Wednesday night, got up Thursday morning, played hockey all during the day, and then got in one at Moxie's right at the arena there on Thursday night. So, I mean, the only thing that could have been a little bit better, I don't know what was going on at the rink, some kind of art show or something that I wasn't interested in. It would have been nice if the Jets were playing or the Moose or somebody, but they were out of town. But, no, I had a blast. I enjoy coming into Winnipeg. I always have a good time. Unfortunately, it's very quick, but I can always come back.
Yeah, and also, Commie, sorry there's no Uber here. Like, we're trying to do something about that, but, it's weird. No Uber.
That's okay. You know what? At the Keens tournament, we just take a van out to the rink, and other than that, we drink everywhere within a block radius of the hotel, so it's all good. We don't need Ubers. We're all set.
Mike, last one for you. I'm just curious, you know, just reliving that 04 Cup run brings me back some memories, and I got to ask you about Marty Jelena. I mean, it's not often a guy scores one or two OT series winning goals, but the guy scored three OT series winning goals. What is that like being on the bench and then maybe after in the dressing room when a guy closes out his third series in overtime?
Yeah, we loved it. The first one, obviously somebody has to score the first one. The second one, you're like, all right, way to go, Marty. You know, that's two for two, and then he does it against San Jose, too, and like, we definitely had fun with it. It was incredible, and Calgary loves them because, I mean, they love them for other reasons, too, but they definitely, that's where it started. And, I mean, you could really make the argument can be made that, I mean, he could have, if there's maybe another camera coming from the, and I'm not bitter at all, but If there's a camera that's shooting straight down on the goal line like there is today, unless Tampa scores in like the last couple minutes, he would have had all four series winners, which would have been, I mean, I don't think that's ever happened again. I don't know. Has anybody ever had three in a playoff run? I have no clue.
It's like Paul Henderson in the 72 Summit Series. That's probably the closest equivalent to it.
Yeah. Very rare. But yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I don't remember anything in particular. Like, we would bug him and stuff, the Eliminator, because people always had that, you know, the sign and stuff. So we'd like rib him about that playfully. But yeah, we were really glad we had him on our team, that's for sure.
Mike Commodore is our guest on NHL this week. Mike, last question for you. Brad Marchand made his comments about Mitch Marner earlier this week. You know, was that just him being a pest, or do you think, is that fair game for one player to talk about another player's contract in public like that? Or is that just Marchand being Marchand?
I think that's a little bit of Marchand being Marchand, and maybe, you know what, maybe it's not going to change the contract negotiations at all, but like, I mean, it'd be good for Boston unless Marner leaves, I guess, but it would be good for Boston if that guy makes as much money as humanly possible, because that's going to be less money they have to spread around to other people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think mostly that's just Brad being Brad. I think he's a great follow on Twitter. I think it was last year where they lost out, and I think it was that night. No, it was the next day where he was just torching people on Twitter, like in the middle of the day. So it was like brutally obvious that his season had ended. He got up in the morning and he went straight to a Boston pub and was hammering beers all day. So I was following him. I was dying laughing. I think that guy's great on Twitter.
Mike Commodore, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Always a great guest on the program.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Awesome, man. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Mike. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, we discuss Brad Marchand and his comments about Mitch Marner.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You must have loved that tweet, Mark. My goodness.
I was excited.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know what you want me to say, but as far as the tweet, I mean, it's pretty funny, I'm sure. You know, like you said, kind of half and half there with stirring the pot, and obviously a lot of truth behind it.
Auston Matthews responding to Mark Masters asking him about Brad Marchand's tweet about Mitch Marner. That's a mouthful. Welcome back to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. All this week at Rumors, all the way from New York City, Graham K is at the club. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
What does the K stand for?
It's K-A-Y, in fact.
Oh.
So, it, you know, K stands for K. It's like Homer J. Simpson. What does the J stand for? It's J. Yeah. Anyways, Brad Marchand was, this is an epic troll job, and I must give him full credit for it, because it's outstanding. The NHL public relations account sent out a couple of tweets, in case you missed it, extolling the virtues of how great Mitch Marner has been as of late. So what did Brad Marchand do? He went on Twitter and he goes, "I can't wait to see this kid's new contract. It's got to be $12 million AAV, hashtag Marner watch." And now, of course, that sets everything ablaze in Toronto, and Marner at $12 million doesn't fit into the Leafs salary cap structure. Well done by Brad Marchand in this situation.
Yeah, it's hilarious. And we know that Brad Marchand is like this on the ice, and we know that he's done this on Twitter before, but you know, this is really funny, specifically because there's a good chance the Bruins and the Leafs are going to play in the first round, similar mm-hmm. to the last year, right?
And so, the year before that.
You know, a lot of people are making a big deal about this, and obviously most players are not taking this seriously at all, right? So it's just funny. Brad, you know how much I like Brad Marchand, Drew, right? Like,
yeah.
He's such a good player.
He didn't lick anybody in this instance.
He metaphorically may have, licked the face of Leafs fans or the league capologists.
That's right. Metaphorically, you're allowed to lick players. I don't think you're allowed to do it on the ice anymore.
It's just so funny. He's complimenting Mitch Marner, right?
He's complimenting him at the same time as sticking a knife into the Leafs organization.
It's just hilarious, right? Yeah. Like, and you know, some people were saying that, you know, he's trying to get the bidding war, the offer sheet war going on Mitch Marner. I mean, it's just a funny tweet.
Yeah.
He's trolling. Like you said, it's just a troll job on a team and a player that he knows the team's going to have to go through, the Bruins are going to have to go through to get to the second round.
And the amount of media that follows him around are obviously going to go crazy about it, and it's going to be a topic of conversation for 2 or 3 days. God bless them. So that's exactly what happened. Kyle Dubas, Leafs general manager, in response to Brad Marchand.
This is great.
Quote, that was a master troll job. You have to respect that. With over 90% probability to play Boston in the first round, that he, being Marchand, was waking up in the morning thinking about the Toronto Maple Leafs, will take that.
Yeah.
Tap the brakes there, Kyle. You guys haven't beat them in the playoffs yet. Maybe you don't want to be. And the Bruins haven't lost in something like, haven't lost in regulation in something like 17 games. Tap the brakes, Kyle. You could have stopped with, that was a master troll job. Well done.
I just wonder when and where and how this tweet and thought was conceptualized.
Well, he saw the NHL PR tweet. The public relations Twitter account of the NHL promoted Marner. You know Marchand jumped at that opportunity. Ray Ferraro weighed in on this topic earlier this week because it's, you know, been the topic of conversation in and around the NHL. Here's what Ray Ferraro had to say.
When I read it, I had a loud, almost belly laugh because it was so obvious that he's just mocking the whole deal. Like, he could care less what Mitch Marner makes. He's already locked into a new into a contract. So if Marner makes $8 million, $10 million, $12 million, it's not affecting Marchand anyway.
No.
It doesn't matter.
No.
And so I thought it was funny. I think it's interesting. And, it's not like it's vicious or mean or anything. It's just kind of funny. And so I was all for it.
That's Ray Ferraro addressing the tweet by Brad Marchand. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
Ray Ferraro, one of the best analysts in the game. I mean, he summed it up there. Brad Marchand's having so much fun. And when you're that good and you can back it up, right? He's one of the best scorers in the entire league. And... everybody just loves it. Everybody loves them. And
it's comedy gold. It's comedic gold.
That's it for the Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to our guest, John Forslund, Carolina Hurricanes broadcaster Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and Mike Commodore. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's on tsn1290.ca as well. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Great job behind the board tonight by producer James DeRoschuk. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Sean Asor, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Wednesday night, it's NHL This Week. Thanks for listening to TSN Radio 1290.